This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. I write about the digital signage business on my blog, 69. I celebrate great and intriguing work. I explore and I explain new technology, and I filter the industry BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to get beyond the press releases and trade show chatter and hear from some of the most successful, influential, and interesting people in this business. In this episode, I spoke with Randy Dearborn, who runs all the digital signage programs for MGM's casino and resort properties. Randy is also the chairman this year of the Digital Signage Federation. Randy's a very funny, candid guy, and we covered a lot of ground when we met at MGM's executive offices in Las Vegas. So tell me about your estate, so to speak. Like, what all do you control here?
So we control on the, we'll call it on the digital signage, or I like to refer to it as digital devices. Just on the Las Vegas Strip, this doesn't include our regional stuff and our international stuff, but just the properties we own, the 11 properties on the Las Vegas Strip. Right now, we're up to about 62,000 displays, and that's, we kind of break that into segments of low-rise and high-rise. Low-rise being your traditional digital signage, interactive menus, Twitter walls, video boards, convention wayfinding, well, we have a little thing we call live directional signs, which are kind of your directional, you know, used to be static. We kind of converting those over to digital marquees. It's kind of the base on the low.
And the marquees are the like the big ass video boards.
Exactly, okay. out on Las Vegas Strip, and then in the high rise, we have about 42,000 guest rooms, of which half of those, a little more than half now, are on an IPTV system.
So that means they're addressable.
They are. Okay. What we did is we actually built the largest DOCSIS 3 network in our industry anywhere, and turned that old RF cable into a digital infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the IPTV. But it's other things, other devices in the room that we control, door locks, thermostats, through, you know, Zigbee interfaces, the AP for the Wi-Fi, all travels over this DOCSIS network. Mm. But the IPTV has really, really been a, it was a huge challenge initially. Probably the closest I'd come in my 23 years here of losing my, ending my career, I should say. But it's been incredible. Did it with a company called Tangerine Global. Mm-hmm. As you know, I'm a big Apple guy, longtime Mac guy. Did it initially with a Microsoft Media Room. Of course, Microsoft went and sold the product to Ericsson. But really, literally starting to, not only is it the best TV system, just a straight TV system, I mean, instant channel change, guide and all that. But I really started looking at that, the screen in the room, because everyone brings their own content, as a marketing device, another marketing platform. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to have a menu and to push marketing content to specific customers in the room based on a plethora of things, right? Applications that are built in, it literally is starting to become a revenue generating device. So things like, we just turned on an app called for late checkout. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, I don't mean to dig too deep right into the IPTV system, but it kind of gives you a sense of, like I said, about 62,000 devices that we control in the Las Vegas Strip, or screens, I should say, displays. Right. And then we control, like I said, other devices, but really on the display side, that's kind of our ecosystem right now.
And in the times that I've heard you talk, I believe you described you're doing a lot with very little, and I don't mean you're under resource, but you're able mm-hmm. to do a lot with pretty small staff.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I have, like I said, we're a unique shop too. We do, because we create content, and of course we get content from outside sources mm-hmm. also. But we do content, we do hardware, and we do software. And I've got about 40 people that work for me that control this giant ecosystem.
Oh, okay.
You know, network, software, upgrading, interactive, creating UIs, all this. It's
So when you say you're doing hardware,
yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So what I mean, we don't actually manufacture hardware.
Right.
But
but you're not making LCD glass
exactly,
in the back.
That's
or something.
Right. I don't have a little workshop of Santa's elves. They're good. We make our own glass.
We're making OLEDs then, today, boys.
That's right. Yeah. What do you think? In this shape, we literally design the hardware that we're. Okay. You know, we'll put together the pieces. We always say we don't want to buy the car. We just want parts, and we'll build the car. And once again, it really all comes from content. So we determine what the content is and what we're trying to get across, and then we kind of work backwards. Okay, what's the hardware that's going to do this? Mm-hmm. Who are the hardware manufacturers we're going to use? How are we going to assemble? And then what's the software that's going to talk to it? Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by that. So we design the system and then maintain it moving forward.
And that includes the enclosures and.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I literally just this morning had a discussion with my group on the enclosures for screens you see on table games. Mm-hmm. Just had a new, we designed the enclosure for it and having it manufactured right now. Just got approval for it this morning.
You pushed the envelope quite a bit and pretty early on and what is described as digital signage. I remember you telling me about how you were using data to deal with wine inventory systems and push stuff to iPads for a high-end bottle of wine was opened and therefore there were two pours that were available for individual pours and all that sort of stuff. And nobody else is really, certainly a few years ago, was not doing that.
Yeah, look, I can give you a couple examples, and one of those I'll tie back into my IPTV system. Mm-hmm. One example is we had recently was we pushed out offers, right, and then tracked the offers in our low rise, and we were actually stunned of the actual capture rate. It was for a Cirque du Soleil show, kind of enveloped one of our properties, pushed it out with an offer code on it, and immediately, within like a 10-day period, had generated like an additional $100,000 in revenue. Just off, and we just were playing with it, right? Mm-hmm. So on a more detailed, like I said, I'll get into the IPTV system a little bit more where we really do capture all the data. Couple of things. Number one is the content that we push to the room, the broadcast content, we know what people are watching. I can track exactly what people are watching in the rooms, which is huge, especially right now. Moving forward, you know, the content world is changing rapidly, the way we consume content. So the ability to, you know, traditionally you deal with the lodge nets or the hospitality networks of the world and you'd buy kind of the package. Same way we would buy a cable package at home.
Right.
I have I know I shouldn't let this cat out of the bag, but I have content negotiations coming up, kind of renewal, contract renewals at the end of the year. And a package that I would buy, right, with all these different broadcasters in it, I now have the ability to go back and go, you know what? No one's watching this channel, that channel, that channel. I don't want it.
Nobody cares about the Big Ten network here, so.
Here's what I want, and I want you to price these channels.
Right.
I don't want all this other crap. So that's one unique area that we're able to do it. The other is the ability to track now the menu on this screen. People are picking up their remote. They're tracking through, right? I know what they're looking at, right? They're looking at ticket sales or food and beverage or things like that. Like I said, the late checkout app alone, the revenue that we're generating off of it is almost paying for the system alone, right?
Wow.
But now the ability to push, let's say, instant messaging. We're working on that instant messaging app into the room. But we'll call it like a late night dining menu. So right now, what do? You go to a room service menu, you peel open the page, you look at the late night or the dining menu, and you kind of pick something, you pick up the phone. Room service doesn't really make money, believe it or not. So what we've determined is we're going to put together a small, easy to, I'm going to say use, late night menu that will automatically, and I'll just pick a nominal time, at midnight, trigger on the IPTV system. Okay, here's late night dining, here's five choices. Here's the pricing, dynamic pricing, right, based on inventory that's in the kitchen right now, and push it out, and we already see what the take is on it. And so you can literally adjust accordingly. And so that's just a couple of examples of real-time data that's coming back, and we've kind of isolated a few of these things and go, okay, this is working. How do we push that out? Restaurant, we're right now working on restaurant reservations. So we're getting real-time feed of what restaurant reservations are at a specific property. And then what we're doing is we're adjusting accordingly in our scheduling and going, okay, these outlets are already saturated. Mm-hmm. Let's push out offers at these restaurants and try and drive people into that. And so that's really, we're hot and heavy in this right now. It's quite frankly, I got to tell you, being in the space for so long, it is the most exciting time of my career. Just because, a couple of things is we know if it's working or more importantly, if it's not working.
Right.
But more importantly, everyone that would speculate before, the food and beverage people, the marketing people, the property people, you know what? I got real-time data now that ends all arguments.
Yeah.
No more speculation. It's working or it's not working. Let's take the facts. Just it's the old, and I am going to show my eyes, it's the old Joe Friday line, just the facts.
Yeah.
So.
And it kind of speaks to how the digital signage piece of this is just one kind of thread of a whole bunch of activities, and they're all very intertwined very as opposed to tangled.
Exactly, it is. But you know what? It's funny is, and I'll give you an example, once again, back to the IPTV system, is so we built this late checkout app, right? Mm-hmm. And what it does, the menu dynamically changes based on your time of stay. It's your first night here, you turn on the TV, the menu that pops up is dining, entertainment, basically what do you want to do, right? You're in town. On your last day, actually it's the night before your last day, that menu now when you turn on the TV is flight times, late checkout, do you want to order a quick meal on the way out, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're getting that the take on that, right? But it's the ability to, okay, so now I create this late checkout app. It starts to generate revenue that is created literally on one of my digital screens, right? Well, now what do I have? I've got the mobile app people asking, how do I incorporate this into the mobile app? Mm-hmm. How do I incorporate it into other, you know, hooks across the folio? Right. So it is, it's, you know, we look at it, oh, it's digital signage, but really now I've got other departments, other operations going, ooh, how do we leverage something that you've already built and you proved that it's worked?
Would it be pretty myopic for a hospitality group to be thinking in terms of digital signage as just its own activity?
Look, I believe that the term digital signage is antiquated. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a digital.
Says the president of the Digital Signage Federation.
It is. And, yeah. And I have to, and it's funny, I brought this up with the
chairman or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I had brought this up with a DSE a few years ago. Yeah. You know, as we've kind of locked ourselves in the Digital Signage Expo, Digital Signage Federation. And we have these discussions ongoing is in fact, we're literally working on a new logo, right, for the DSE or a DSF. And how does it denote a broader spectrum?
Right.
Because it really is a quote unquote a digital device. You know, I try and catch myself and refer to it as a digital display, because it really is now touching everything from the phone in my pocket to my iPad to a marquee to a screen to, and now how does that talk to my door lock, my thermostat, my lights in my room where I can control that. So it really is, like I said, I think it's a broader view now, and I think everyone does need to kind of open their blinders and go, how does this affect other things going on?
Yeah, if you just say you're a digital signage company.
Yeah, you've cubbyholed yourself, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the casino floor and around the property, what kinds of things are you doing in terms of signage? I know you were talking about dynamics, directional stuff.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, this was kind of a pet project of mine a while ago. I call it live directional signage. And this was taking kind of the static signs that reside across any property. Ballrooms this way, pool that way, you know, the traditional arrows, right? And especially like a restaurant, let's say, changes out outlet. Well, what do you got to do? You got to call a sign company. They come out. It's hard-coded. They've got to do that. So, number one, let's turn those digital. Mm-hmm. And it was a couple of reasons. Number one is in the morning, everyone's looking for the convention center. They're looking for coffee. They're looking to have breakfast, right? They don't need to know where the nightclub is.
Yes.
As the day goes on, that, you know, where your customer is looking for is changing throughout the day. At the end of the convention, I want to know where the restaurant is, where the bar is, where the showroom is. Mm-hmm. And so literally we are converting that static signage, which has been in there for years and years and years, over to digital. And not only that of the directional of saying, hey, the pool's this way right now, but the ability to push out, oh, and by the way, there's a cabana offer right now. Mm-hmm. So it's not just location, but it's offers that are baked into that. You know, there's nothing better than, it's funny, we had proven out that when we had implemented the wine menus, they were a drink, wine, dessert menu, because it would kind of come out three times. And what we found was if you show pictures of really cool drinks, people will buy them.
Yeah.
And so that same ability with this live directional signage is, not only is there a restaurant right there, but a great image of whatever, dish. It does, it's bugs to a light, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big project that we've been working on for a while.
It's kind of my theory that there's a lot of fuss around the really fancy, glamorous, expensive, attention-grabbing digital signage installations, like big ass video walls and all that, but some of the most effective and powerful and meaningful digital signage implementations are stupid little shit like directional signs.
Yep.
Exactly. You feel the same way?
I do. It's continual. People are looking for it. They're programmed to look for that.
Yeah. Right?
And it's, you know, the other thing is we all see so much bad content. You know, it's easy to pick out that content. I think everyone kind of overthinks content, but especially my properties, it is sensory overload. Walk through that casino floor. I mean, it's bells and
I call
buzzers.
Them kaleidoscopes.
It is. That's a great analogy of it. It is. It is a complete kaleidoscope. And so a little bit simpler take on, you know, that people can kind of gravitate to is really just because the choice, selection. I mean, go buy a box of cereal at the grocery store, right? It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so if you can kind of simplify that a little bit and capture people, it works. So like I said, we've proven that it actually works.
Yeah. How do you cut through that kaleidoscope with...
Yeah.
Do you just not even try in certain areas?
Helvetica.
Comic Sans.
It just works.
That's it.
Helvetica. It's the key. It's a simple key. You know what? I think a lot of it is you got to kind of step back and almost walk your property, pretend that it's the first time you've ever been there. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of that is you kind of step back, you walk it, and you go, okay, where are these nice, clean sight lines? Where is there some things that I, regardless of how big of a display I put, I know that people are going to be looking over at that.
Yeah.
And so let's not even waste the space. And of course, our floors, our buildings are continually changing. And so we're constantly, in fact, it's funny, every Monday I have on my calendar, I have a 2-hour property walk. I pick a property and I walk the property. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the kind of stuff I'm looking for.
On your own or with the manager?
On my own. Okay. I sit and I just kind of walk the property and I look for stuff. I will sit and watch people interact, like with our touch screens and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just, quite frankly, just to kind of look at human behavior and look and see what, you know, what's working, what's not working, and kind mm-hmm. of try and get a fresh, a different take at it.
That was going to be my next question. What does work and what have you found just doesn't work?
Some things that have surprised me, quite frankly. It's funny, when we first started putting interactive screens and touch screens in, right, and this is years ago, and I had initially had told all my my developers, I said, hey, look, you need to make the UI so that a fourth grader can understand it. Simple, straightforward, clean. Helvetica, right?
Yeah.
Because the designer's always trying to impress themselves, right? They're all trying to wow their buddies. Like, stop.
Yeah.
Simple just works. What I realized very, very quickly, because I would sit back and I would just watch. I'd watch human behavior and people interact with these screens. What I realized right away is that the fourth grader, not that I have a bunch of fourth graders wandering my properties, but the fourth graders, they get it. They touch it. It's the 60-year-old that didn't get it.
Yeah.
And I had to change my tact. You know, go, wait a minute. We need to make it even simpler because the older demographic is a little bit hesitant, right? And so that was a lesson early on. What has changed in that space is really, quite frankly, June of 2007 when the iPhone showed up. Now everyone touches everything. Mm-hmm. Static screens, people are touching. They expect everything has a UI on it.
Yeah.
And so that's been a huge, huge shift in that. Another thing that I didn't realize, well, it kind of caught me off guard, and I know I've talked about this, you know, in other events and things like that, is we had put together, this is a few years ago, we were kind of early on the social networking, you know, integration into our digital signage, is we had put, at MGM Grand, 5,000 room hotel, you walk in, 3 giant video displays, 4x4 video walls, 55 inch. And I had done one of them, we had done a Twitter wall on one of them, gave it a handle, and it was on, at MGM Video Wall. And I had done it really as a diversion, so that people could interact with this wall, you know, instantly see their tweets or their Instagram or whatever. And the point was that they didn't realize that they just stood in line for 20 minutes to check in, right? So it was more about the guest experience than it was about the Twitter wall. And two things. One, I didn't realize how much traction I got. I mean, it's incredible the amount of traction we get on these things. Like I said, they've got them at all the properties now. You know, we'll do live voting and things like that. But what really caught me by surprise is that right away, the outlets at that property, restaurants, bars, nightclubs, entertainment, used it to do instant marketing to the guests. So suddenly in the stream mm-hmm. would be a 25% off tickets to the show tonight that instantly popped up.
Right.
And so the ability to do dynamic marketing on a real-time basis kind of made me rethink my digital signage ecosystem. Because your traditional was you schedule things, you put it up, you do day partying, you do it based on inventory, you know what. This was instant, boom, messaging right now out onto my digital signage, which we see, you know, on Twitter and Facebook and all that. But that was, like I said, something that kind of caught me off guard.
You've got this many-headed beast mm-hmm. And all the stuff that's coming in and all these very different interests. How do you organize that? Do you have like a weekly meeting, or is there somebody who's the master scheduler of everything?
Okay, so I do. Yes,
some
we do.
Poor
we,
bastard.
We do have a weekly meeting with our group internally. Mm-hmm. It's been a challenge on operations for a couple of reasons. Number one is because operations is always changing. People are moving properties. They're going for, you know, you're the head of marketing over here, and then you move to this property, you move. And of course, I've got to deal with these different entities. I got to deal with retail. I got to deal with food and beverage. I got to deal with marketing. I got to deal with entertainment. And so what we've done is we've kind of created a quote unquote, a content committee. And this committee meets on a weekly basis and looks at the calendar of events. It's funny because we really, the calendar of events that came out was all over the place because everyone would have their own individual calendars. So it really was herding cats is what it is. And so it's a content committee that meets once a week, determines kind of moving forward. Hey, what are we going to promote? What are sales on this? What are sales on that? I, you know, I always joke with people when people ask me what I do. I have two answers. I say, I disseminate content accordingly, right?
And then you wake them up.
Exactly, and then I wake them up. And then I always like to tell people that I sell bananas. And they, you know, they look at me like I got three heads. I said, no, look at, if you look at my inventory, what I've got hotel rooms, I got showroom seats, I got restaurant seats. Those are bananas, and every night those bananas rot. If I didn't sell that banana, that seat, that room, that it's a rotten banana, quite frankly. And so that's really what this group is. Where do we have the most bang for the buck? Where is the most value for our company? Is it worth more for us to send someone to this show? Because remember, I've got partnerships with all, Cirque du Soleil and AEG and my own. So a ticket isn't a ticket isn't a ticket. A certain ticket will have more value to my company than a ticket sale for whatever group. And so that's really what we kind of target and focus in on. Where's the value moving forward? And look, we're still working through the process, which is why the earlier portion of the discussion about data, the analytics and the data is so important, because that's what truly proves out. It's not speculation.
Yeah.
It's no. We know if we push this, we're going to get take on it.
Yeah.
And the real value is there. Now, of course, something recently has happened, which is, you know, put another layer on that, is I did a deal with a company called Holt Media. And this is to generate revenue through outside advertising. And so we're starting to push a little bit of outside advertising into the ecosystem, which kind of steps on that.
This would be like brand advertising for it liquor is, brands? And
Well, that's a funny discussion. Liquor I won't get into. But exactly. We're actually doing one today, a software company called VM Software. And we're generating revenue off of that right now, which, like I said, just another layer on it. And so I will say this. This is one mistake I made early on, is I didn't standardize my playlists, my total running times. You know, if you're a billboard company, it's 8 second spots.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. We've got spots all over the place. Well, it makes it tough to do the math.
Right.
Especially when you want to generate revenue and you need proof of playback and they want this percentage of the time. And so we're kind of working through that right now, cleaning up things and standardizing that. But it's something, had I, you know, you learn this stuff. But and part of it is because I've been in it so long and we just kind of started off and, you know, doing whatever, just get stuff out. But it's something I recommend right off the bat is standardize your run times. It's just a spec is what it is, right from the start.
I assume you kind of started as a skunk works and you were lucky if anybody would even talk to you. And now you're in a position where there are people, there are competing interests to have inventory.
Very much so. It's funny you say that. This is a great, and like I said, my first digital signage system was, and I've been here 23 years, right? Came from Disney, came here. And the first one I implemented was when they were building Treasure Island in 1993. And it was when people were doing like VHS, you know, on a rewind, right? And I'm an old Mac guy, right? And at a program called MacroMind Director, which is the grandfather of Flash.
Yeah.
Right? Became Macromedia Director, and then became Shockwave, and then it's Flash, which is now passe, thank God. And what it was a director show, Macromedia Director show. I would create these digital shows, real simple. I mean, if you looked at it now, it'd be like an episode of South Park.
Yeah.
The graphics were so archaic, right? And at the time, we were like, wow. Anyways, and I would create these director shows, and you'd put it in play mode. It was a digital show that would play. Mm-hmm. And then I would modulate it over the RF TV system. I would assign it a channel.
Yeah.
And I could go to any TV, tune it to channel 98, and it was my Macromedia Director show, right?
Yay.
And so I was. It was me.
Yeah.
I was a one-man shop.
Yeah.
And I did. I slowly grew. You know. Remember the original AdTech and Alcorn McBride, the MPEG-1 players. You know, I remember I liked the hardware in one and software in the other. And then eventually, this company was built through acquisitions, right? Like, you know, Mirage Resorts and MGM bought them. And then that company went and bought Mandalay Bay, which is the you know, the monster that I reside in now. Anyways, I ended up having every digital signage system known to mankind. I had Cool Signs, I had Alcorn McBride, I had Pacific Streams, I had, I mean, I can't even tell you how many we had. And so what happened, and quite frankly, this is, I'm going to say 4 years ago, you know, this department slowly but surely grew. And I had someone do, one of my guys do an inventory of how many displays we had. And they came back to me and goes, we have right now, we have like 45,000 displays. I had no clue. Mm-hmm. I literally, to your point, it started off as a skunk works and grew into this monster. And we went, oh my God, we...
I need a raise.
Okay, exactly. Damn it. And that's when we started thinking, okay, we have this huge infrastructure. How do we start leveraging it better? Mm-hmm. But it did. It quite frankly, it caught me by surprise, right?
So now you're obviously a pioneer going back to 93 with this stuff. And now you're the chairman of the DSF, correct?
Correct.
It's not the president, it's the chairman.
It's the chairman, yeah.
Okay. You never strike me as somebody who would be a chairman of an advocacy organization. So how did you end up here?
That is funny you say that. I am rogue by nature.
Yeah, you're not a consensus builder.
I'm not. And I'm not. It's funny. My wife has the greatest line about me. She says, she said, Dearborn, people either love you or hate you, and it's for the same exact reason. And it's because I pull no punches. I kind of call it as I see it, right? Yeah. And some people like that, and some people, you know, running from it. You know what? For me, initially, and I have to say that initially it was with the DSE, right? And then, you know, I was asked to join the DSF. And, you know, for me, initially I was like, ah, it's just another freaking chore, right? And I almost thought, you know what? I have been in this space so long, and it was almost kind of just kind of giving back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The ability to, because I just assume that everyone kind of knows, right? It's the other line I will have to give, pay tribute to my wife. As she says, Dearborn, stop thinking everyone thinks like you. Right? Because you just think, you know.
Just thank God they don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, right? You know. I don't know if you ever saw the movie, The Hudsucker Proxy. I love the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
And throughout it, it's Tim Robbins, and he's got in his pocket a piece of paper with a circle on it. And he keeps showing it, and he starts in the mailroom, and he works his way all the way up to the top of the company. And he keeps showing it to everyone throughout the movie, right? And it's a picture of a circle. And he's like, you know, for the children. You know, for the children. And everyone's like, what the hell is he talking about? It's a hula hoop is what it is. and that's sometimes I forget because I think, you know.
Yeah.
You know, for the kids, right? And so I don't want to say it was community service, but it was. It was kind of a way of, you know what? I'm at that point in my career where I realize that I do bring this wealth of knowledge, right? Not that I'm smarter than anyone. I've just been in the space so damn long. And the ability to kind of pass that on and go, hey, look, here's what we've learned, you know, with the good and bad. And we've failed miserably at things and we've done wonderful at other things. And it really was, to kind of give back and go, hey, look, you know, I'm an open book.
Yeah,
I've got nothing to hide. You got questions? Come ask me. I'll tell you what we know, and once again, what's worked and what doesn't work, and where we're headed, and what we think. You know, where this whole space is headed.
So, do you have like your mission, the thing that you wanted to do in the year that you've got the what do they call it, the football? You got the nuclear football.
So, you know, what's funny as I follow Ken Goldberg, right? Who's just done a freaking fabulous job. He's the inaugural member of it and did the international thing, and I can only I kind of float between him and Rich Ventura, and I always joke that they're kind of my water wings to kind of float me through this, right? So it's funny, so at the end of last year I started kind of making a list, right? And I realized there's just so much more to do to kind of grow this organization, and where would my attributes kind of fit best into this space. And it's funny, as it's turned out now, it's kind of redefining our look and the way we communicate, and it's back to simplifying it. And it is. It's a new, fresh logo that kind of portrays a more global organization, not this little niche, right? Niche or niche, depending on how, right? Kitty corner, catty corner.
Either works.
Yeah, exactly. And redeveloping the web portal and just kind of our messaging, and quite frankly, kind of helping the way we organize ourselves, our board meetings, you know, more focus in the organization, quite frankly. And what is our mission? Our mission is, you know, not only the advocacy of the industry, but to grow the organization and how do we best bring value to people joining the organization. And so that's really is kind of what it has morphed into. And that's
because I only joined like 2-3 months ago.
Right.
And it took me a long time to kind of make that decision. And I'm curious if somebody, you met somebody and they're getting into this industry and they said, why should I join? How would you answer that?
And I have to tell you, it's one of the biggest things that we really discussed on the board this year is not only that, why do I join, but what's the difference between you and the DSE? Which quite frankly, I think when we all joined, we didn't know initially. And a lot of that is really what we're working on right now is to clarify that. And I think we've got a, I think our membership this year has brought some great new blood into the organization. And I really, really have high hopes for it. I mean, I think, I think I am lucky that I've kind of come into it in, you know, my term is where it is, because we had our first full board meeting 2 months ago. I forget what, we're in June now, right? In Charlotte, and like I said, our new members on the board, incredibly impressive. And really, I think for the first time, I'm like, oh my God, this, I truly feel this organization is going to grow to heights that I didn't anticipate when I joined it initially. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very, very excited.
So you're excited about
it. And it's not just a plug. I mean, I truly was amazed. I walked around the meeting, I'm like, holy crap, we got some heavyweights in here. We actually got, you know.
Where do you think the industry is going? I've asked this to a lot of people. Uh-huh. There's way more, well, maybe not more supply than demand, but it's just such a crowded, confused market, and everybody says the same pitch.
So I think everyone, not just this industry, but every industry right now is fighting through the overwhelming input of data. Mm-hmm. They just don't know how to disseminate it and what to do with it. And like I said, it's not just us, it's everyone. Let me step back a little bit. When I got in the industry, it was initially for the wow factor. Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Right? I had those Fujitsu flat screens.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. $12,000.
Exactly. Wow. Cool. And then as pricing started to come down, I could actually financially start to justify putting in digital displays through the labor savings of print and just the dynamic ability of it, right? To change out things fairly quickly. So there became kind of a small little ROI, right? So you had to be in it because everyone was kind of getting into it, the wow factor, and then you could start to kind of financially justify it. But now, and it's really since the financial crash of 08, I know our company, our entire city now, which was run by marketing people initially, is all run by finance people now. Mm-hmm. It's all about the ROI. And there's no better way to prove this stuff out is through the analytics we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
If I can push something out and I see real-time traction, revenue coming back, it sells itself.
Yeah.
And I think that I have my own needs in this, but I think it's a matter of time. Someone has got to get on that bit and go, look, this really works. Here's a proven ROI, and that's really what's going to drive this industry moving forward. Mm-hmm. And who's going to take the lead on that? It's kind of up for grabs right now, you know?
And what do you mean, like a vendor? Or?
I think a vendor, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to your earlier point is, you know, everyone's looking for a turnkey solution. Mm-hmm. Well, what better turnkey solution if there's actually revenue tied to the side of it? Because a finance guy can look at it and go, okay, you're telling me I invest this and here's my returns, it's done deal.
Mm-hmm. So we've had all the bells and whistles and the gadgets and everything else, and we've had video analytics, but it's much more about man's looking at screen, serve an ad that skews to males.
Right.
But what you're talking about is real business intelligence.
Real business intelligence.
And triggered content based on the BI.
Yep.
Huh.
Yep. I mean, that's where I see it going right now.
Yeah.
Because like I said, you prove it out, boom. Sells itself.
And that's what's happened here.
That's what's happening here right now.
Huh. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good chat.
Enjoy the heat.
Yeah, 150.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day, and subscribe to this podcast as I stick my shiny new Tascam recorder in the faces of more industry people in the coming weeks. Thanks again for listening. 16.9, the blog, and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. I'm Dave Haynes.